Welcome back. You're listening to This Week with Justin McCarthy. Israel has said that it's preparing to attack Hamas militants in Gaza by land, air and sea, but it has given no timings on when a ground offensive will begin. 1.1 million Palestinians living in North Gaza have been told to evacuate and move south, with the United Nations warning that Gaza is being pushed into an abyss. Tensions are also rising on Israel's northern border with Lebanon after an Israeli citizen was killed by a missile fired from Lebanon. More than 1,300 people were killed last weekend when Hamas fighters crossed the border into Israel to attack Israeli civilians and soldiers. A further 2,300 people have been killed in the Gaza Strip after Israel launched an attack in the aftermath of the Hamas incursion. In a moment, we will speak with our correspondent Paul Cunningham, who's in Tel Aviv. But first, our reporter Sharon Lynch has been speaking with Palestinians and Israelis after a week of war.
The sound of residents of Khan Yunis searching through the rubble of their destroyed homes following an Israeli airstrike. Yara Alaga was born and raised in Ireland. She lost 13 members of her family in that bombardment.
A whole family were bunking together, were all bombed during the carpet bombing of Khan Yunis, the town where I come from. So I come from Gaza. And then yesterday we received news that the 11th member of the family, a 9-year-old, also died from his injuries. And yesterday we also received news that two more members of our family had died. So that's 13 members in total. And the kind of most recent messages we're receiving from family in Gaza is that they're sticking together in their numbers, so that if they were to be bombed, which they believe is inevitable and imminent, that they'll die together. And so no one's left behind to grieve alone. For us, we have to wait until the morning to know of any casualties because of the electricity cuts. I received news this morning that my cousin, you know, he said he'd stated kind of point blank, like he said, we're starving. You know, please let the world know that we're starving.
Mariam Mofid's two brothers and her extended family are in Gaza. She's been trying to get in contact with them.
My family is in the north, so that they all decided to move. The last call I got from my brother is that they are in the car leaving, taking only the necessary food and medications. I tried to call them, no communication. I hope that the only reason for this is that there is no internet or no call networks at the place where they are. But I don't have any update.
So they're trying to get to the south of Gaza, is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is one of my brothers and who is Irish. My other brother, who is a doctor surgeon, he is Irish as well, was born in Dublin. And you can consider him like living in the hospital since this all began. He works more than 18 hours a day. He is unable to rest and he can't return home to see his daughters.
The last time I had my family on the phone, I spoke with my uncle who told me that they ran out of water.
That's human rights lawyer Lara Alberno. She co-hosts a podcast called The Palestine Pod.
My own family had some electricity, which is not the case of the majority of Gazans because they are in a house with solar panels, so they were able to have some electricity and able to use that, but that's not the case. So my uncle said to me, everybody is sharing what they have right now. Everybody is sharing what they have, but the resources have dwindled.
A siren sound in Ashkelon, 14 kilometres from the Gaza Strip. Staff Rosh says Israelis fear for their safety after last weekend's attacks.
So we don't go out of our house. We stay at home. We're trying like to cook some good food, tasty food to like make things better. But it's really hard because every time you hear about another person that is missing or murdered, and a lot of my friends lost members. My best friend lost her cousin at the party at Nova Festival. And a lot of my family members also got like serve duty. So so they're in the army right now, and my father is a consul, so he's abroad. A lot of things happened really fast, but we are just trying to keep to keep us focused, and we're just listening to the guys, to the news, and if there's an alarm, we go inside the shelter. And when everything is done and we hear all the bombs and rockets, we go out and we stay home. And, you know, we're just trying to keep everything normal as possible and trying to lift the morale up. We are volunteering a lot for the army and donate so much money and food and clothes to all the soldiers that protect us. The army is not in the streets. It's not like a pandemic, a crazy thing. It is a crazy thing, but the armies are, the soldiers are not walking in the streets and looking for terrorists. Right now, the streets are empty. Sometimes they're like cars or whatever, because people still need to live and to buy groceries and go from one house to another. So right now, everything is like quiet, and we're not waiting for the next alarm, but we are very like, keep in mind that every time there can be an alarm. So we're very trying to be calm as much as possible.
Yara is also trying to remain calm as she waits for updates from her family in Gaza.
The worst part, I think, your family members kind of every night before the sun sets and the bombing kind of starts, we ring anyone we can get in contact with to just say our goodbyes. Yeah, I think for everyone in Gaza, I think they're all just waiting for that, waiting to die at this point.
That was Yara Alaga ending that report from Sharon Lynch. Let's go to Tel Aviv now and speak with our correspondent, Paul Cunningham. Paul, good afternoon. We heard there the concerns of Irish people for their families in Gaza, also from Israelis who are outside of the border of Gaza, nearby. What are conditions like in Gaza at the moment?
Well, the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees says its facilities in the south of the Strip are not able to cope with the influx of people coming from the north who are fleeing that pending Israeli ground invasion. And the UN says that there's a desperate need for food, for water, for medicines, and warns that people are going to now die unless there are humanitarian corridors. One person described it as a catastrophic situation. According to the authorities in Gaza, 10,000 people have been injured in Israeli airstrikes over the past week, and that alone would, I guess, would overwhelm a health service without a war going on. I was in touch with Oxfam, which is partner organisations in Gaza, this afternoon. One of them is called Aid and Hope, and it has expressed deep concern for the welfare of 12,000 people who have cancer but who can no longer receive treatment. Their general manager asked what will happen, saying that if the cancer doesn't kill them, then the war will.
Are people being allowed to cross the border to get out of Gaza?
No, not at all. Gaza, I guess, was already one of the most densely populated areas in the world. I think 2.3 million people living in an area measuring just 365 square kilometres. Now the Israeli Defence Forces have ordered people living in the north, the most populated area, all to move south. And that's happening as the bombs continue to fall. But once they get to the south, they can't go any further. They're not able to travel beyond that point.
What are we likely to see then happening in the coming days? We know that Israel's defence forces have said they're planning this major offensive by ground, air and sea. So what are people preparing for?
Well, I think the first thing they're preparing for is, when is the ground war going to happen? There's been an intensification of the air campaign today, and that suggests that the ground invasion is very, very close. We know, for example, that Israel has completed its mobilization of its reservists. That's 360,000 people. Israel has also said it's going to target northern Gaza, and in particular Gaza City, and that's because it claims most Hamas commanders are based there, and there's also extensive Hamas tunnels. Now, urban warfare is invariably one which is high civilian casualties, so there's a huge apprehension about what's happening. The Israeli Defence Minister said it could take weeks or months to achieve the country's aims of smashing Hamas. I guess what's also unclear at this stage is, should Israel be successful in its aims, is it going to withdraw from the Gaza Strip entirely or not?
Now, we've been in touch with the Department of Foreign Affairs here in relation to the small number of Irish citizens who are inside Gaza. What is happening to foreign citizens who are in Gaza at the moment, Paul?
An awful lot of diplomatic efforts are being made, and given the nature of the conflict at the moment, most countries are just not saying what they're doing. One country with an awful lot of influence is Egypt, and so an awful lot of diplomatic activity is travelling through those points. We know that, for example, Israel says that it's confirmed 126 hostages are still being held by Hamas in Gaza. Many of them are not Israeli, and so there's a huge amount of diplomatic activity, but no one's really talking about what's happening for obvious reasons.
And there are rising tensions too, Paul, on the border in the north of Israel, the border with Lebanon, where there are hundreds of Irish soldiers stationed across the border. What can you tell us about what's happening there?
Well, there have been exchanges between Hezbollah, which is an Iranian-backed militia in South Lebanon, and Israeli Defence Forces, but it's gone up a couple of notches today. Hezbollah was firing into Israel on artillery rounds that hit an Israeli village, and one person was killed. The Israeli Defence Forces have now put a 4-kilometre cordon. No one's allowed to go within 4 kilometres of the Lebanese border, and they've also knocked out all GPS. And the big concern, obviously, is that what's happening in Gaza could spill across other borders. And so today's news was very worrying.
And Paul, right now where you are in Tel Aviv, what is the mood among Israelis that you have been speaking to? What are they saying about what has happened and what is to come?
Well, they're on edge. There are air raids 3 or 4 times a day. We had one just an hour ago. People are on edge. Over breakfast today, I saw a man, he was holding his child, but hanging off his shoulder was an AR-15 assault rifle. Others are walking around with holstered pistols. Tel Aviv is a place where many Israelis who lived close to Gaza have come here for safety, and they are fully behind what Israel is planning on doing, and they want it to happen as soon as possible. Walking along the streets, I've been engaged many times about what is Ireland saying about the war. There's a clear perception that Ireland is more favourable to the Palestinian position than Ireland, and it's been very knowledgeable conversations. On one occasion last night, a man was talking to me about Charles Stewart Parnell as well, so they're aware of what's going on, and they want to know how it's being reported and how it's being received.
All right, Paul, thank you for talking to us today. Paul Cunningham, our correspondent in Tel Aviv. Now, the United Nations has described the call from Israel to move more than 1 million civilians out of their homes in northern Gaza as horrendous. UNRWA, that is the United Nations Palestinian Refugee Agency, has said that it will lead to unprecedented levels of misery and further push the people of Gaza into the abyss. And we can talk now to Juliet Tuma, Director of Communications for UNRWA. Juliet, thank you for joining us today. Can you paint a picture about what you know that of what is unfolding in Gaza right now?
Thanks. It's going from bad to worse by the second. We have estimates that 1 million people have been displaced in 1 week. People continue to leave their homes, our own staff included. Our staff who have had to relocate from the center of Gaza to the south, they're being forced to ration their drinking water. Our supplies are running out very, very fast because of the siege that has been imposed on Gaza. We have not been able to bring in any supplies into the Gaza Strip for more than a week now.
The people who have been told to move out of their homes and to move south, where are they going?
They're going mainly to, they're going to several places, either to UN centers and facilities, or they're taking shelter with friends and families or their own homes. Some have homes in the southern parts.
And you say that you have...
But many, many thousands of them are actually have taken refuge in our warehouse, which is one of the largest in the region. Yet it's not at all equipped to host human beings, and so it's very, very crowded. It's not equipped. It's a warehouse, really. So people are sleeping on the floor. They're sharing. Hundreds of people are sharing one toilet. The conditions are very bad. Water is running out. It has run out, in fact, in many parts. It's a disaster.
And what is the
prospect? It's really a disaster.
What is the prospect of getting food supplies of water or medicines into Gaza at the moment?
Well, we've got to do that now. I mean, we should have done it even a few days ago, but we're not allowed. Gaza is under siege, and UNRWA has not been able to bring in not one grain of wheat into the Gaza Strip. And Gaza normally relies on a few sources of water, including water from Israeli private sector. So not one drop of water has come into Gaza. So Gaza is running on dry.
Are hospitals in northern Gaza still functioning?
I don't know. Actually, we don't follow that. We don't follow that part. No.
In terms of your own staff, I mean, you're obviously concerned for the safety of your own colleagues on the ground too. Have they been given any assurances that they will be safe when the ground invasion starts?
Well, UNRWA has sadly already lost at least 13 colleagues of mine. We lost 5 teachers. One engineer, one doctor, and other support staff. We have stated yesterday morning that we are not able anymore to ensure the safety of our own facilities, the UNRWA facilities, which is unprecedented because in accordance with the rules of any war, and this war has rules too, these facilities, UN facilities and civilian infrastructure in general should always be protected, but they're not, and they haven't been in this war.
All right, Juliet Tuma, Director of Communications with UNRWA, thank you for talking to us this afternoon. Let's look now at what is likely to happen in the coming days when Israel mobilises ground forces and enters the Gaza Strip. And we can talk now to security analyst Paul Beaver in London. Paul Beaver, good afternoon and thank you for talking to us today. Israel has been massing troops on the border with Gaza, preparing for this invasion by ground, by air and by sea. What does a possible ground invasion look like?
Well, it looks pretty horrendous in terms of what it will actually do on the ground. If the Israelis are going to move in with ground forces, there are going to be casualties, of course, on all sides. Their aim will be to eliminate Hamas, and I think that will be the overall strategy of the war. It's to destroy as much of the infrastructure and, to be honest, to kill as many Hamas people as they can. The problem is those are mixed up with ordinary Palestinians who have no part in the conflict. So there's a real issue here. The Israelis have got total domination of the upper air, but they haven't yet managed to eliminate the rockets and the UAVs, the uncrewed aerial vehicles that have been used, the drones that have been used by Hamas. And they haven't managed to eliminate some of the anti-aircraft defences, all of those things they will have to do. And then the troops, and could be as many as 300,000, will have to move in. The problem for the Israel Defense Force High Command is they've also, of course, have got the West Bank occupied area as well to police. And they've got the risk of, on their northern border with Lebanon, the Iranian-backed Hezbollah group causing problems. They're basically, Hamas and Hezbollah are basically armies. There's no point in thinking of them any longer as terrorist groups. They are absolutely armies.
And we know Hamas last weekend took dozens of hostages during those attacks. To what extent then does that, the taking of those hostages, complicate matters for Israeli soldiers as they plan to enter the Gaza Strip?
I think Israeli soldiers will be very concerned that hostages, if they are still alive, and I have my doubts about that, they will be used as human shields. Ordinary Palestinians will be used as human shields as well. This is a really nasty catastrophe. And it's being compounded by the fact that Palestinian civilians are not allowed into Egypt. I mean, the great solution, remembering that Gaza borders Egypt as well as Israel is that Egypt opens up its border and has refugee camps. Now, the sort of refugee camps that they can create with Saudi money and Saudi technology, they can have reasonable places for people to go that are in the Sinai. And that's where water can be supplied and food and medicine can be supplied. But as long as Egypt keeps its border closed and Israel keeps its border closed, it becomes a cauldron of horror, and it's going to be horrendous. And it's as a former soldier, I look at this and think this is not a campaign I would like to be anywhere near, not in the planning nor the execution.
The stated objective of Israel is to destroy Hamas. How long might an incursion last, or are we looking at possible occupation?
I think the incursion will last some weeks because it's we know from history, whether it's Stalingrad or what the Ukrainians have been doing in the Donbass, that these sort of operations take a long time. The more rubble there is, the more difficult it is for the attacking force. In this sort of situation, the advantage is with the defender. So it's going to take a long time, I think, for that. And then you have to decide, what do you do with the northern part of Gaza? Do you just bulldoze it? It's going to take a very long time to rebuild it. And we've got so many other things to do.
All right. Paul Beaver, security analyst in London, thank you very much for talking to us today. Now, a visit to Jerusalem by the European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen, who offered Israel the EU's unconditional support after last week's killings by Hamas militants, has triggered divisions at the top of the EU. We're joined in studio now by the Fianna Fáil MEP, Barry Andrews. Barry Andrews, welcome to the programme. Did Ursula von der Leyen overstep the mark?
I think she did. I agreed with her assertion of Israel's right to self-defence. I agreed with the sympathy she expressed for the trauma visited upon the people of Israel by the attacks, the brutal attacks by Hamas. It's what she didn't say. She didn't insist that Israel would respect international law. She also made claims that the Commission couldn't stand up. It is up to the Foreign Affairs Council to set European foreign policy. And that was made clear to her in the middle of last week. So we will have a European Council meeting on Tuesday, where I think the European position will be a little bit more coherent than it has been for the last 7 days.
This offer of unconditional support, did that, in your view, has that put EU diplomats and officials in the Middle East at risk?
It's put them in an incredibly difficult position. I've heard from diplomats that for the first part of last week, they were merely reflecting the position that President von der Leyen had expressed. But by the middle of the week, once Joseph Borrell, as the High Representative, made his position clear, it was much easier for European diplomats in the Middle East to express a more nuanced position that reflected the sensitivity of the situation and the dynamic nature of the situation. A lot of people are saying very inflexible positions, binary positions right now won't age well. And I think that's been borne out by the more recent events of the last 72 hours.
Ursula von der Leyen supporters will point out that she's taking the same approach with Israel as she did with Ukraine in expressing solidarity with a country which was invaded and whose people were slaughtered. Why is this different?
There's everybody knows there's a recurring cycle of violence in the Middle East, and particularly in Gaza. Everybody knew that more violence would come. Everybody knew that there would be a need for an assertion of international law here. Everybody recognizes that Israel's right to defend itself is based in international law, specifically the UN Charter, but equally international law forbids forcible transfer of populations. It forbids collective punishment, and we cannot cherry pick international law. I think that point has got through to President von der Leyen, and the European Parliament will have an opportunity to express its view in a debate next Wednesday and a resolution that we'll vote on Thursday, which I've been working on over the weekend with other MEPs to try and get that wording in a more balanced way.
Fianna Fáil MEP Barry Andrews, thank you for talking to us today. After the break, we'll go to Warsaw for the Polish elections.